conveyors.
Comforter.
It's a blanket. Just a blanket. Why do guys like you and I know what a duvet is? Is this essential to our survival in the hunter-gatherer sense of the word? No. What are we then?
Consumers.
Right. We are consumers. We are byproducts of a lifestyle obsession. Murder, crime, poverty, these things don't concern me. What concerns me are celebrity magazines, television with 500 channels, some guy's name on my underwear. Rogaine, Viagra, Olestra.
Martha Stewart.
Fuck Martha Stewart. Martha's polishing the brass on the Titanic. It's all going down, man. So fuck off with your sofa units and string green stripe patterns. I say never be complete. I say stop being perfect. I say let's evolve. Let the chips fall where they may. That's me. And I could be wrong. Maybe it's a terrible tragedy.
It's just stuff. It's not tragic.
Well, you did lose a lot of versatile solutions for modern living.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, dying time's here. Woo!
Tim, how you doing? How are the Pirates doing? They in first place?
Who are the Pirates?
Love the Buccos.
Gotta love the Buccos.
I will say this. I lost interest in the football game, not because of what either team did, but the referees, the hit on Derek Carr when they decided 10 seconds after the play was over to throw a flag because the fans were like, whoa! And they called it targeting. If that was targeting, then when the Raiders' safety hit Veramove for whatever the new tight ends for the Steelers is later in the game, if what happened to Carr was targeting, then that was targeting when the Raider didn't get back up and literally fell on his face.
Hold on, dude. There's a flaw to your logic, Tim.
What's that?
One of them was a quarterback, and
the other one was he didn't slide.
Oh, dude, no, it does matter because they throw. You can't touch a quarterback. They will throw a flag if you hit a quarterback.
And that is
now if it had been the same thing to Ben, then I think it would be a legit complaint. But they're going to let other guys do stuff. They're just not going to let the marquee quarterback guy get hit.
I don't care. This is why I'm losing interest.
I saw you posted on Facebook and you're like, fuck football. I'm watching the car or something.
Yeah, I am losing so much interest in the NFL in general because it's just dumb. It's dumb.
Hey, wrestling's great now, Tim.
I can't get back into it.
Oh, man.
I'll just go watch more movies.
Join us, Tim. It's great.
Nope. Oh, I just got three massacre movies this weekend alone, so no. Oh,
wow, holy crap.
But yeah, I just didn't care for the game after that.
Well, we got, I'm going to say this, and I think I've been saying it for a while. I know football chat's running long, but I don't care. Jorge can just suck it and listen. OBJ can go fuck himself. I think that dude can go. And we got a little shaken up today, man. Mayfield took a shot, had to go in the back, came back, but and Landry was the big one. We were like, oh no, Landry was out of the game before the first quarter.
Dude, when I just want the Browns to make a new rule. Baker Mayfield doesn't tackle anybody. Mm-hmm. Almost everybody out there is bigger than you, dude. You're going to get hurt.
Good effort, but not smart.
I'm sitting there watching the game, and I'm like, oh, no, because the way he twisted and landed and how he looked getting up, man, that was bad. I even think I texted you guys like, oh, shit, Mayfield. I don't want to see anybody get hurt, right? I felt bad when they popped Carr, and I'm like, no, come on, man. That guy's finally getting his due, you know? Oh, can we extend football chat one more bit?
Okay.
Is it not amazing when Sam Darnold is no longer on the New York Jets, how he suddenly and amazingly and incredibly can play football? Because he's now had two games in a row where he looks like an NFL quarterback. Mm. And he looked like doggy doo-doo when he was in New York.
Well.
And the rookie they drafted through, what, four, five picks today against the Patriots?
Oh, I don't know. I wasn't even watching that game.
Yeah, no. I just think the best thing that ever happened to Darnold was the Jets deciding he wasn't, you know, any good. It's like, well, whoopsie.
Yeah, well, the Jets aren't any good anyway, so.
Yeah, no. But, I mean, you know, Darnold has talent around him now, and he's playing pretty friggin' good.
Hey, Dad proclaimed today that Dad put on his, like, Johnny Carson Karnak hat and predicted that Derek Carr and the Vegas Raiders are no fucking joke. And also, he jumped on board my bandwagon and he said, goddamn, Matt Stafford's a fucking baller that's not shackled to a shit team anymore. Watch the fuck out.
Yeah. Yeah, there you got Stafford, who was in Detroit all those years in a bad organization. And now you've got, Darnold out of a bad scene. You know, it just sucks because I think you said this last year, Detroit just totally wasted Matthew Stafford for like a decade.
Yeah.
That was an understatement. Yep. Mm-hmm. They did with Barry Sanders too, but what else is there?
Well, look at this. Barry Sanders retired early. Huh, that's weird. Megatron retires early. Huh, that's weird. Wait, it's the same team. Are people just like, I'm done beating my head against the wall with this organization?
That used to be the way they did it Cleveland used to be the place people go to die. Get your paycheck, and I think that's the way Odell Beckham Jr. is treating it, but...
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, like, Megatron would rather just stop playing at his best. I'm just gonna... Like Barry Sanders, I'm just gonna stop playing. I don't even want to do it anymore. It's like, wow, holy shit. Two Hall of Famers within 25 years just go, I'm done. And when they can still in their prime, it's just like, wow, Detroit, what the fuck are you doing?
Anyway, that team holding, there's a couple teams, them and the Jets, just blow that place up and start again. Anyway, we're a fucking movie podcast. We need to start talking about some movies. People get angry.
I'm back. I'm back. And I would like to start the show off.
Okay.
Because you guys have probably forgotten, but I am not doing John's stupid random knowledge, and I've got a science one for you.
Oh, you're not going to play Jack Hanna anymore?
Oh, no, no. We'll get back to that, but this is a science one.
Oh, okay.
And it's a science factoid that I think fits our program perfectly.
Okay.
All right. Tim.
Yeah.
Did you know that gravity keeps the fluids and solids from what you've eaten in your stomach? which means the reason that you can only burp is because you can only release gas. So that's why you can burp. Due to the lack of gravity, science has now determined that because of the lack of gravity holding down the fluids and solids and allowing the gas to escape, you are not able to burp in outer space. Now, science is yet to determine how it affects farting.
Well, this is important research that needs to be done immediately.
Yeah, Bezos, you hearing it?
Somebody.
I'm do some more Amazon Prime shit. You put another rocket up there and sort this out for us.
Yeah, okay? We need to know why people can't fart or can fart in space. Yeah, I've seen that.
We now know they can't burp in space, which is amazing because you guys realize that means somebody actually took the time to do the research to determine that.
This could be potential like fatal shit or
true
that you know you could have some. I've seen that really shitty movie Rocket Man.
You know, here's the thing though, Kyle. What if Tim goes to a fair and a all-night drive-in on the moon? What the hell could he possibly do to the porta potty at that point? Is it possible for Tim to wreck a porta potty on the moon?
Bezos, get a hold of us.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, dudes.
I'd take that challenge.
By the way, though, I got to tell you, how about them dude wipes? Have you gotten us sponsored yet?
No, we need to. You need to hook us up with some dude wipes.
Dude wipes.
Let me tell you, I had today to go out to Walmart to get a new toilet lid. Because I didn't want one that just, like, smashes. I want one that goes down easy. So I went and bought a new one. I was real close. I was real close to getting a bidet.
You mean a fire hose for your butthole?
It seems like, I don't know. It seems so easier than just, like, the way we do it. I mean, we haven't advanced to the three seashell technique yet.
But, Tim,
I mean,
what is your opinion on spraying your butthole instead of wiping?
No, you wipe after.
I've never been to it, but I know Dan and Courtney have one. Every time I've been at their house the past few weeks, because they got one for somebody got it for their wedding present. I always, if somebody's near me, I take them to the bathroom and I'm like, hey, are you supposed to drink this?
No, it doesn't work like that. You doo-doo. And then you spray all the poo-poo off your butthole with the bidet, and then you wipe. It seems so much, like, cleaner and a lot.
It's a fire hose for your butt.
Yeah. I mean, you wash your body in the shower. Why not wash your butthole? I didn't purchase it, so I'm still on the fence. But there's a, like, conversion kit at Walmart you can get for, like, $30 that...
Oh, so you're not just going to install a bidet, you're installing a Walmart bidet, because if anybody's known for their quality bidets,
it's Walmart. It's
Walmart who caters to the NASCAR House with Wheels crowd.
Well, I mean, think about it. Those guys have got to be packing away
that's true.
You know, bathroom destroying shit.
That's true.
So, I mean, if I was going to look for something that can do the job, Walmart would probably be the joint. I mean, I'm not, quality-wise, that might be different, but I don't know. I was just thinking about it. I was like, you know, I don't know. We'll have to get Dan on this, see how he stacks up with the bidet experience.
You know what we need to do? We have access to shipping. What we need to do is stress test whatever bidet you decide on. We just ship it to Tim. We ship it to Tim and go, Tim, it's time to stress test the bidet.
Yeah. Can it take it?
Yeah. If it can survive the Tim, then I believe it's quality.
I don't know, man.
I don't know if it would have survived Friday evening when I started drinking pumpkin beers and had some bad tacos the day before.
Oh, God. that's a digestive science experiment there.
Ew. Like, no, on anything pumpkin. Fuck, gross. Nah. Except pie, all the pumpkin shit can just go fuck right off. It's not, no, it's all gross to me. I don't know where you guys stand on it's getting October time and everything's pumpkin spice douches and pumpkin spice candles and everything.
I enjoy a pumpkin pie.
Yeah.
And I also, there is a candle that I have that when you light it, it smells like somebody's baking a pumpkin pie. And I'm not going to lie, that's incredible.
It's a good shit.
But like all the pumpkin spice stuff, no.
Yeah, enough with that shit. I saw pumpkin spice Reese cups.
That's like normie Halloween. That's like Halloween light. They're like, well, you know, I don't like the scary stuff, but I do enjoy my pumpkin spice fall latte. It's like, fuck off.
I saw that Reese cup pumpkin spice, and I'm like, you have the perfect recipe: peanut butter and chocolate. There's no need to fuck around and ruin it, but they did. They also have like this Frankenstein Reese cup that I was gonna get and try out, but nah. I've been chowing on like a bunch of Red Vines licorice because they're the superior. Twizzlers can go screw. It's got to be Red Vines. But I bought like an $8 tub of Red Vines at Walmart. I'm a seriously disgusting human being. Anyway, John, what have you been watching, sir?
Well, you know, first of all, I want to say it's a little light on the movies. I was on vacation. I had a lovely time. I missed everybody. I'm back. We watched, been binge watching some shows. First thing I want to do is say, you know, I'm still kind of like checked out on Marvel. I don't like their programs. I really had never watched Loki or anything, but those What If shows.
Uh-huh.
I used to love those What If comics, and I'll be damned if they didn't nail them. The zombie one is just crazy awesome, but their What If programs are really good. So I've watched all the What Ifs up until now. I've also started binge watching. What was it?
Ask you a What If question?
Yeah,
because I looked. I'm on my sister's Disney Plus account. And the way the What If Zombies ended, did you think there was going to be, like, the next week was going to be What If Zombies Part 2? Like, they were going to continue that? I thought
No. That's how the What If issues would happen, a lot of them.
Yeah, but it just didn't feel like that story was over, because I have those comics. And
it was, you know, it's just helpful. It was hopeful. But no, they're not doing Marvel Zombies. This was a What If. And it's the What If, not the Marvel Zombies. It was just a What If with some zombies in it. So they know this is how What Ifs end. It's a half hour, you know, or it was one issue in the comics. And a lot of them would just end with, you know, it doesn't finish the story, but it's like, hey, they still have hope. A hero is still a hero and, you know, whatever. So, yeah, no, I didn't expect this, another one. In fact, I'd be disappointed because that's not what What Ifs are supposed to be. So I was watching that. I was watching. There's this new Hulu series, Only Murderers in the Building. It's Selena Gomez, Steve Martin, and Martin Short. And it's like this murder mystery in the building with these quirky characters. Very kind of Murder, She Wrote, but much more clever and more F-bombs.
That's a TV show? I thought it was a movie.
No, it's an ongoing television show.
Huh, okay.
And it's like one, so far, it's been like one murder mystery the whole time. They're trying to figure out if this guy killed himself, and there's all these interconnected things. It's really neat. So I've been watching those two shows. I watched a couple old Charlie Chan movies when I was on vacation because it was fun to do so. Since I've been back, I watched Force to Fear. That's Zane Hirschberger.
Yes.
Bruins movie. And yes. I watched it for another podcast I'm on called In the Mouth of Monster. And they sent it to us to review. And I tell you, man, I liked it. Yep. I liked it a lot. It was fast-paced. It's beautifully shot. It's excellent. And I love the fact that I thought it was going to be one thing, and then it turns out something else. It's basically like a slasher movie combined with an action flick. It was really neat. It was really neat. I liked it a lot.
It felt like one of those lost direct-to-video movies.
Yeah, yeah, and they just did a really good job on it. I mean, it's not perfect, but for the low budget and what they were doing, it's really good.
Yeah, and I've and what's cool is all of them really worked at their craft, the stunts, the fight mm-hmm. scenes, everything. They really went at doing that stuff.
Yeah. And then I watched Moonstalker from 1989. I wasn't expecting to enjoy it at all. Moonstalker is a very late to the game, late 80s slasher movie that I had not heard of. It's not classic, but it's decent enough that I was shocked by how much I kind of enjoyed it. It's got 17 kills, all of them are tame. But it's a line them up and knock them down slasher movie. The killer looks really cool in the beginning. He's in a straitjacket and a mask, and then he ends up in a friggin' cowboy hat and sunglasses. That was disappointing. But overall, Moonstalker is kind of cool. I know you guys said you covered it for the show a few years ago, but I maybe I'm just burned out on so many god-awful, pointless, no story, or you can't see what's going on, or there's no narrative at all slasher movies that were being made. But this one's got a story, and it's got a killer who is memorable, and, you know, hey, I mean, you know, it is what it is. But I liked it. And then I now watched one of my all-time new favorites. And it's Fred Olen Ray flick from 1990. I watched Alienator.
Mm-hmm.
Get a now, poster. Fred Olen Ray is going to be at Wasteland.
Yeah. I'm not going to Wasteland. Check out this cast, though. Jan Michael Vincent, John Philip Law, PJ Souls, Leo Gordon, Robert Quarry, and Joe Friggin' Pilato.
Hey.
You know, it's harmless fun. And I think that's when Fred Olen Ray is at his best. Hey, basically, the Alienator is a lady bodybuilder sent to, in like some, you know, futuristic bikini, metal bikini stuff. And she's sent to Earth to kill a bad guy who escaped his execution. That's about it. And it, you know what, guys? I don't know, maybe I was just in a weird mood, but I kind of loved it. I'm sorry. Hey, I won't tell anybody it's a great movie, but by God, it was fun. That's what I watched.
That's it?
That's it.
Well, you truly did take a vacation, sir.
Yeah, I mean, I watched the movies for the show, but yeah. But yeah, no, I read a lot. I finished up my first Ruby Jean Jensen book. And I'm most of the way through a Montauk Monster, which is a novel from one of my favorite writers, Hunter Shea, I think his name is. So, yeah, but I mean, I read a lot. I hung out, went to the beach, saw the ponies. And yes, there's horses on the beach because we went to an island that is well known for its horses. Stuck my feet in the ocean, no more than that, because fish poop in that water. Ate my own weight, which is a lot, in crab cakes. I ate crab cakes on pizza. I had crab cakes and burritos. So yeah, and then I went to the fair this week helping out with the wifey poo. And actually ate. I gotta talk to you. Can I talk to you about a food thing?
Sure.
I ate something called a pork parfait.
That sounds real gross. But I bet it isn't.
Tim, check this out. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you know what a parfait is, like normally an ice cream parfait with all the layers and stuff?
Yes.
Yeah. So here's the pork parfait, and this is an Ohio invention that I absolutely love. It's the first time I've ever seen it. The first layer on the bottom of this big bucket is a layer of mashed potatoes. Then there's a layer of melted cheddar cheese. Then there's a layer of bacon. Then there's a big layer of pulled pork, barbecue pulled pork, awesome barbecue pulled pork. And then there's a giant dollop of sour cream on the top. It's a heart attack in a bucket, but oh my God, is it good. And here's the best part, guys. We actually got to eat it. The booth that sells all the pork stuff, like pork tenderloin and all that kind of food you can get, as well as the pork parfait, is in front of the pig barn. So it's like
you were gloating.
I'm eating your friends. You'll be here soon. We were there. And my wife's like, why are the pigs crying? And I'm like, well, they're stretching them. She's like, why would you stretch a pig? Well, how do you get pulled pork?
Yeah. That sounds really good, but I don't want it all mashed together.
Oh, dude, no, you don't understand. It's layered. You can choose to mix it up, or you can eat the layers. Kyle?
I love all that stuff. I just don't want it. Kyle, I'm a
September,
weird dude.
Next September,
yeah.
You're going to drive to Worcester, Ohio for the Wayne County Fair. I'm going to take you in there, and I'm going to get you a pork parfait. And you're going to start eating it, and then you're going to be like, I don't know why I was worried.
No, I'm one of those guys that don't want his food touching other food on their plate. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, the wife does that.
I don't want one
food touching the other. Yeah, but this is fair food. It's different rules.
I don't want my eggs touching my syrup.
But I think it's a mental thing or a biological thing. When you see your food in a bucket, it's okay.
Just rather eat like a human.
Well, that's not what the fair is for, dude.
That's true. That is true. Tim, what'd you watch?
Yeah, that's it for me.
Here, let me look real quick here, because I've got to go through stuff we watched last week. I watched Carousel the second, which I talked about. I watched that for a second time. That's going to be in my top five movies.
I figured that you were jazzed when that...
Oh, it's... As I said to Steve... You gave me House of a Thousand Corpses, then you gave me Devil's Rejects. That is literally my comparison of the two.
Listen to this. My dog loves it.
There you go. Carousel the Second is just absolutely wonderful. If you like weirdness, it's going to be your favorite movie, one of your favorite movies of the year if you're into weirdness.
I do enjoy
weirdness. And I watched all the ones we're doing this week. Found a movie, an old movie from 1980 called The Attic. I don't know if either of you have seen this one.
I've never heard of this.
Yeah, it's just a slow burn movie where a I've lost my voice playing badminton yesterday.
I saw you had some badminton massacre going down.
Oh, yeah. There was some smack talk, and the person that was talking to smack got a shuttlecock to the eye. Mm. But different. But also, too, watching The Attic, a librarian, she's taking care of her wheelchair-bound father. It's a slow burn, like I said. And Louise, her husband, was supposed to be her husband, disappeared many, many, many years ago, 19 to be exact. And basically she gives all of her money to the younger person who's taking over for at the library. And basically the end of the movie, she finds out her father that she's been taking care of. She thinks she's losing her mind. The ending lets you interpret whatever way you want. If she may have the whole time, but her father at like the big spoiler alert is, hey, he's able to walk, and he was making her take care of him the whole time. It's on YouTube. It's worth a watch. I'm not going to say it's wonderful, but it was worth a watch because I never heard or seen it. Just like, you were saying, Kyle, also watched a new movie called Massacre Academy, and it's basically a slasher film set in 1987. Pretty decent, some cool gore, fun stuff. But hey, guys, I know yous love the retro movies. I know the filmmakers love doing it. Make sure you got all your stuff covered, because 47 minutes in, somebody gets into a 2002 Ford Taurus.
No.
So it's one of those weird things. When you make a point to say what year your movie is, and something pops up that's not from that year, yes. Also, And Kyle, this movie would be for you. I watched this today. The Manson Brothers Midnight Zombie Massacre.
Is this the one with Randy Couture?
Yes.
I peruse this.
It's fun. It's not going to win like top 10 movie of the year, but the wrestling references.
Oh,
the behind the scene, because a lot of this is like behind the scenes of New Mexico wrestling. And it's just got great characters with DB Sweeney, Mindy Robinson, Randy Couture, and the whole point is the Manson brothers are a tag team that have been around for 3 decades and destroying people, and basically their nemesis, some dude that made one of the tag partners tap out in 1992, is coming to do a big cage match on Halloween night. But some of the wrestlers are doing some bad Chinese HGH, and this is turning people into zombies. And it's very, very fun stuff behind the scenes of wrestling business that even there's still some people that will not admit goes down today. But it pokes fun at it. Kyle, I honestly believe you'll enjoy this.
I think I've got my movie I need to watch tonight.
Yeah, I was glad I got this one. It's not stupid. Let's put it that way. It does not embarrass itself.
Does it also have a 2002 Ford Taurus?
No, it does not.
Okay.
But I rewatched a couple of movies, and of course, we talked about the car. We rewatched that once more again this week, so I was rewatching a few things. But that was what I watched this week.
This is probably the week I've watched the most things. I went goddamn berserk. First, did you watch the Return of Dark Side of the Ring, Tim?
Yes, I did. I just watched that before we were doing the podcast.
Have you seen all the cancel culture reactions that are coming out of this?
I have not. I heard about it. Mark Madden was talking about this the other day, but I didn't pay too much attention to it. And then I seen somebody like had a relative like known name made up a Facebook page calling to cancel Ric Flair. And I was like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, well, I think statute of limitations and also,
put it this way, Kyle, no matter what you're going to say, you're already wrong.
I'm already wrong, yeah.
And yes, even, and it's not because,
yeah.
Even if you're right, you're already wrong.
People are throwing a fit because Tommy Dreamer was on there and he said,
he told it how it should be?
He just spoke his opinion. Whether it be right or wrong, it doesn't matter.
But it's, you know what? His opinion. I'm with him. I'm with him.
And people want him canceled too. And he's just like, hey,
you know what?
It doesn't matter what I say. People are going to get mad because I have a ponytail.
He's like, I'm 50 and just glad I got hair.
Yeah. And
he sees it for what it is. And I am proud of that. I like him. I respect his opinion. He is right. I agree with him. The people that want to cancel Tommy Dreamer because he said that, go fuck yourself. Please die. Give me more air on this earth. I am tired of that stuff.
It's a little ridiculous and
it's dumb.
I did watch it. It was about the plane ride from hell, and what we're talking about is,
yes,
you know, it's a pretty widely known story, even if you don't know about wrestling. After a pay-per-view overseas,
my biggest issue with this is if you're trying to cancel Ric Flair for this, where were you for the past 40 fucking years?
Yeah, Ric Flair is known to be doing he does this shit all the time.
Yeah.
So basically, you know, they're coming back from overseas. They've chartered a plane. They're wrestlers. They're crazy human beings. They start drinking. They go through like 4 alcohol carts and shit just gets out of control. Mr. Perfect and Brock Lesnar fight up against the side of the plane. X-Pac cuts off Michael PSA's ponytail. Scott Hall tries to lick a woman in a drunken rage, or just a drunken pass.
Well, yeah,
thing.
And like they explain, like he was so destroyed. Like he, that was in the middle of his.
They should not have brought him back. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the big thing, like they had one of the waitresses there, and or stewardesses, I should say, and she, Ric Flair, pulled his ding dong out and was doing the helicopter maneuver and kind of rubbed up against her and tried to, I think they put it, he tried to make her touch the title belt.
Yes.
Now people
she
are
even
flipping
admit
out.
To it, she's like, yeah. I didn't feel like I was ever going to get raped or
no,
anything like that.
I felt bad there, for her, though.
It, yeah, nobody was saying it wasn't wrong.
It obviously struck a chord in that lady that is, she didn't forget any of that. But
yes,
here's the thing. You can't blame Ric Flair all you want. That lady took a payoff.
Yeah, my wife said that.
She took a payoff. You can't complain now. Sure, Tony Khan can choose not to put Ric Flair on a contract. That's totally cool. But you can't. You've passed the point of where you can complain about it. Well, you can complain about it, but you can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
So and yeah. Anyway, that was a really good episode. What else? I watched a new Netflix jam. And I'm starting to get into these, like, these movies are coming out where it's, like, you can tell they were filmed during Corona because it's, like, one person and very story-driven, not a lot of actors. And they released one from the guy who directed Training Day and all those cop, really, really good cop L.A. movies. They released one with Jake Gyllenhaal on Netflix called The Guilty, where he plays a 9-1, well, he's a cop that is under investigation for some nefarious thing that happened, and he isn't fired, but he is stuck doing 9-1-1 duty, and a call comes in with a lady that he thinks has been kidnapped by her husband, and it goes from there. Maybe that's not exactly what happens. The tables get turned and it's all done over the 911 system. And Jake Gyllenhaal is a good enough actor to pull that off. And it wasn't the best movie I've ever seen, but it was pretty good, but you could tell, and there's nothing wrong with it that they did this because they could, and it was Corona time. So there wasn't like any big action scenes. It's literally just Jake Gyllenhaal in a room talking to a lady on a headset. And it works. I watched this. This is kind of a notorious documentary called Whoop Dreams. Have you ever heard of Whoop Dreams? It's this
film. Is that the one with Leonardo DiCaprio?
No. It's this film site. Got on Kickstarter and raised like $4,000 to go to the Gathering of the Juggalos.
Oh, okay.
So you imagine where this is going.
I remember watching a documentary about the Juggalos.
Yeah, it's exactly what you think. And nothing, you know, Juggalos. It's, you know what you're getting into. I watched a ton. I don't know what.
But you don't want to talk about the Juggalos testing their women?
No, they were.
Yeah, I remember. Like that being a whole segment in the documentary.
No, the big thing.
That's why I always laugh when people want to cancel people. It's like, you have not seen the Juggalos documentary.
No, the big Juggalo to do on this thing was they just got labeled by the FBI as a gang. Remember when that happened?
I don't know.
Yeah, the FBI labeled, which I guess is a pretty serious thing.
Yeah.
The one guy was explaining, like, now the FBI considers being a Juggalo as a gang member.
Yeah.
If you commit a crime, it's way different than just a regular Joe committing a crime. because they have classified those guys as a gang, and it's worse, which is completely fucking weird. But it was pretty good. You can find that on Vimeo. It's only 45 minutes long. It's a bunch of LA comics going to the Gathering of the Juggalos, and they don't make fun of the Juggalos. They honestly do a documentary about what's going on and what type of people these guys are, and
okay.
And you know what you're getting into. I watched Kids in the Hall of the Brain Candies because that's one of the funniest movies ever. And every time I watch that movie, I get on Facebook and instantly start a quote war with John Cross about brain candy, where we're talking about flipper babies and birds getting in my eye and fuck, he's on the drug. Watch that on YouTube. If anybody, I don't know why I fell down a deep, dark. I've watched so much Kids in the Hall this week. I truly love that show. And they're coming back. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, Hulu is putting together more. I don't know if it's going to work anymore. It's all five of them. There's going to be new Kids in the Hall.
Well, talking about Kids in the Hall, did you happen to catch Vice Channel's 9/11 two-hour comedy documentary about stuff during 9/11 and what happened right after?
And you said it was a comedy?
Well, it's not just about it's about comedy, like how they're trying to go back to work and everything.
No.
And Scott Thompson has a very large part in it, talking about his play at the time was actually about a plane that was going to go down into a building.
Yikes.
And, like, how just some of the stuff that he was going to do, and it kind of ruined his career there for a couple of years.
No, I did watch, I found this also on YouTube. I watched Death Comes to Town, which is the Kids in the Hall series they did for Canadian TV. It's like actually a story-based episodic TV show where Mark McKinney plays Satan, and he comes to this small town in Canada, and he kills some people. And Scott Thompson, you could tell, he got his job on the Silence of the Hannibal TV show as the DA. Because he plays a DA in this show, and he's really good in that.
Breaking news.
Oh no, what's going on?
Breaking news. It is rumored that now Vinegar Syndrome is dropping Alligator Thanksgiving weekend.
Oh, son of a bitch, really?
Black Friday. That is the rumor. They're saying they have two surprise titles. One is 80s classic with a mean set of teeth. And there's a bunch of people that are from this Vinegar group that I check in once in a while. And they're all saying Alligator.
That would be fucking awesome. We've been waiting for it.
Sorry to interrupt you.
Hey, that's worthy of the interruption.
Yeah.
I did watch the Netflix 6-part documentary series on 9/11. I'm not sure what that's called, but it is. Charlie was talking about it on Facebook, and like where a lot of people were talking about where they were during 9/11. I don't remember at all where I was during 9/11 when it happened, which sucks because that's like the story everybody should remember. Like, you know, your parents will tell you where they were when Kennedy got shot. And I honestly don't remember, but I do remember the day after going to work at a really, really shitty steel shop for not a lot of pay and getting fired because I lost my goddamn mind in the break room on all the idiots that were spreading, oh, it was this guy and that guy, and we should do this. And I'm like, how about you just shut the fuck up? You don't know what happened any more than anybody else does. And I just had enough, and they drugged me to HR, and they said, now's the time not to be doing that. You can't be doing that. Now's the time to come together, and we think we're going to be better without you, so you're fired. And I was like, fucking, I quit. See ya. I don't care.
Yeah.
Watch that. I watched a really good – Paul Schrader's got a new movie. If you don't know who Paul Schrader is, it's the guy who – he wrote Taxi Driver. He directed Blue Collar, Tim. One of the greatest movies we ever found on this show. He's got this new movie called The Card Counter with Oscar Isaac. And it's, okay. It's got Oscar Isaac and the kid from, I don't know his name, but it's the kid from Ready Player One. But don't let that throw you off the stink. The kid's actually good in this. He's not annoying. And it's about Oscar Isaac is he's a man with a dark past, and he is a card counter, but he's not like, this isn't like a big Vegas heist type of card counting thing. It's, he's doing it in these backwater casinos, and maybe, like, he knows, it goes through, yeah, the casino knows I'm counting cards, and they're not going to do anything because, you know, I'm not taking them for anything but, like, $750. He's basically grinding a life on the road doing this, and he's really tortured dude, and it goes back to, he was one of the people that, after 9/11, Willem Dafoe's, is also in this movie. His character was an outside contractor brought in to teach the people at Abu Ghraib, quote unquote, enhanced, enhanced interrogation tactics, basically waterboarding, throwing people in a box with bugs, you know, sleep deprivation, all this shit. And Oscar Isaac was one of his dudes. And when the pictures got leaked from Guantanamo Bay, those were the only people that went down for the crime. So he spent 10 years in prison and he learned to count cards. And he meets Ready Player One's character, who is, he meets him at a casino and he's planning to kill Dafoe. So he kind of goes on the road with Oscar Isaac, and it's really good. It's not a big budget movie. It's a real character piece, but it's really good. It's a T-Shirt Joe movie. And yeah. I immediately told T-Shirt Joe, dude, you need to check this out. You will love it. Okay, here comes the good stuff. I watched a lot of stuff got released to VOD this week. So first I watched Candyman, which is fantastic. It is not a remake at all. It is a pure 100% sequel. And it goes in a really cool direction. It's like 22 years later, Cabrini-Green is gone. And there's only like the outskirts of Cabrini-Green left. And all of that area of Chicago has been gentrified. And your main character is this black couple that are in the art scene. And he starts, you know, getting hip to the Candyman legend. And turns out he goes and investigates. And he kind of gets, I'm not going to say possessed, but really into the myth of the Candyman after he meets this guy who runs like the maintenance part of this laundromat. Mm-hmm. And it turns out through the whole thing, like Tony Todd was not the only Candyman. There's been like not a lot, but there's more people that took over the myth of the Candyman because that was what the black community was using to kind of cope with this legend. They were using it to kind of cope with being gentrified. And now it's a really weird, it's a really cool and original take on gentrification, because the black people got gentrified out of Cabrini-Green, but now like this main character and his girlfriend, they're part of the people that are a part of the gentrification. Like they're the first wave or generation to, you know, prosper on the new stuff that came out of destroying Cabrini-Green. And he slowly gets to turn into Candyman, and it goes in some, it's a real creepy fucking show. And Tony Todd shows up, which is really cool. And you get Virginia Madsen. She's not in it, but she has a lot of audio stuff she does. Because she's listening to the old police tapes and interrogations. And Vanessa Williams, I think was her name, the one from the 92 Candyman that Virginia Madsen kind of made friends with in Cabrini-Green, she's in it. And it gets into this new legend and how it's just really, really fucking good. And it does not embarrass itself. Nor does it rip off the original Candyman. It goes in its own direction, and it's really cool. It reminded me a lot of that Velvet Buzzsaw movie with the art scene and type of people that are doing this shit. It's really cool. I watched M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong's Old. It's bad. There's only two types of Shyamalan Ding Dong movies. There's the really crappy ones, like Lady in the Water, even though I kind of like that movie. And The Village.
Never get in it.
And then there's the real good ones with Unbroken and Split, or Unbreakable and Split. This falls on the bad side, and I'm not going to spoil what... This is the one where they go to the beach and start aging really fast. It's laughably bad.
But I haven't heard anyone even watch that one.
The twist, and I'm not going to spoil it because I think, as bad as those movies are, spoiling an M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong movie is kind of a real shitty thing to do.
Yeah, because you're never going to go watch it.
No, it's the whole movie, and everybody knows it's going to have a twist in it, and it hinges on it. And this one does, but it's so poor and just a dumb idea. You're kind of like, really? That's what's going on? But it's definitely entertaining in a fun, bad movie kind of way. I watched Live Free or Die Hard. And
again?
I kind of love that movie, even though it's a very bad Die Hard movie.
I was going to say, I did like it, but yeah, for it being part of the series, A, it doesn't age well, and B, I thought it was a bad choice to try to go more PG-13 than just doing the regular R rating for that.
Oh, there's just some... I just like the stunt work in the movie.
Oh, yeah, there's no denying that.
Yeah, the tunnel scene is great. There's a lot of cool shootouts, but it's a bad Die Hard movie. They make John McClane invincible, and that's not what you do in a Die Hard movie.
Yeah.
I do like him throwing the car at the helicopter a lot. I watched... my list went away. There it is. I watched Cry Macho. Eastwood has been trying to get this movie done for a long, 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 long time, since like the 80s.
Okay.
It's barely a movie. It's not very interesting. He's done this before. Like, Eastwood always does these movies of like the old generation kind of teaming up with young kids and going down that route. And this is like, he's an old, I think he's 90. And he was a world-class rodeo guy back in the 70s, but he broke his back. So the rancher kept him on and gave him a job. And he was a horse breeder, and he kind of just says, fuck it, I'm done. I've been fucking up, and I'm 90. I'm going to go die. Well, the horse breeder, this big rancher guy, he's played by Dwight Yoakam, who you always want to see in a movie. That guy's great. Whether it's this or Jason Statham trying to steal his penis in Crank 2, the guy is great. He says, do me this favor, go down to Mexico. My wife is abusing my son, and she's got him down there, bring him back. So he goes down there, and it's, you know, the kid's like into the cockfighting scene, and the kid's a kind of terrible actor, and it's him bringing him back to America. And it's just, you know, he finds a lady that he likes in a town that they have to hang out with after their car gets stolen. And it's a character movie, but it's a very bunch of boring characters. There's a couple. Eastwood can still write some funny fucking lines, I'll tell you that. He had me chuckling pretty good a couple times in the movie, but it's kind of just a wet blanket, fart in the wind kind of movie. He's done it. He's done this movie a lot better. I would say A Perfect World is the exact same movie, kind of, only way better. Do you remember that one where Kevin Costner kidnaps the kid?
Yeah, Perfect World. It's been a good long time since I've watched that.
That's a better Eastwood movie in the same vein as this. And Gran Torino's kind of the same thing, where with, you know, the older generation kind of trying to finally understand the new generation. It's exactly the same thing, and that... It just wasn't worth it. That's all I watched. Like I said, I watch a ton of shit. What do we want to do? We got a bunch of questions, or I got a bunch of news, guys.
I didn't see a bunch of questions, but I see a couple of questions.
Hey, our boy's back, dude.
Yeah.
Our boy is back. I got a bunch of news. You guys want to get into the news?
Sure.
I was going to say, I think I've bored John to death. Okay, the news. Here we go.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
I don't know. I didn't see this story. I had to go look it up. But now I guess the internet is up its own butt and everybody's crying foul because they're going to remake The Lost Boys.
Yeah, I've seen this in I think Tristan has mentioned it also. So when we get to that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but still, you gotta say what you gotta say.
What do you guys think? Remaking The Lost Boys?
They're remaking everything, dude.
Yeah, well, I don't care.
That was my point. Why are we at this stage to where, look, as much as we would love it in the horror sci-fi genre movie thing to say some of these things are untouchable and sacred ground, they're not. Hollywood has touched or remade or done different things with every beloved franchise, whether it be a Romero zombie flick, they've all been remade.
The sad part is there's a bunch of horrible movies out there that could use a remake. Yeah, there's a bunch of horrible
they're
movies.
They're gonna do this stuff. I don't know why everybody's bitching. You should have known better. I mean, is there anything out there that hasn't been touched? I can't think of anything. There's no such thing as sacred ground.
Well, I feel like we're due for a Car remake.
Tim, got any thoughts on that Car remake?
No, I think that was proven when that dumbass sequel, whatever in the fuck that piece of shit was.
That was a weird remake that didn't even have the balls enough to call it a remake.
Yeah, it was dumb.
They've not remade Return of the Living Dead.
True. But in
that.
Yeah, that's kind of an offshoot its own, right? Right?
Nah, I don't consider it to be. They basically took all the
bullshit. Hey, they're doing, what is it, the Day of the Dead TV show. Series. So they're allowed to remake Return of the Living Dead, whether we want to or not.
Hellraiser is getting a Hulu series?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, they're going to fucking wreck everything.
Yeah, unless it's Clive Barker behind it, like truly behind it. Fuck it.
I'm not interested.
It will be dumb. Yeah. It will be dumb.
I don't care.
You know what we need? What? Like, you know what we legit need?
What?
Let's get a Tourist Trap remake.
There we go.
I'm all for that, except for I don't want to give Charles Band money.
What makes you think he's going to get it?
Well,
yeah, I don't think he made that movie, did he? I thought he just distributed it.
Yeah, I think that's all.
I'm all for it. Let's do it. I don't think Tourist Trap doesn't have the name recognition. They're not going to do it. I don't think Joe Public knows what Tourist Trap is. I think Joe Public knows what The Lost Boys is.
Well, I don't know that people know what The Lost Boys are, dude.
This is how I gauge it. If my mom and dad know what The Lost Boys is, then Joe Q Public does.
No, that's wrong. Hey, because they're not making movies for your mom and dad. They're making movies for the kids at college.
That's how I judge things that are name recognized. Like, my parents recognize it.
But kids who are the ones who drive the box office don't know The Lost Boys.
I disagree. I think they do.
I work with them, and I've talked to them about movies. They don't.
No, they don't.
Your average 19-20-year-old kid thinks that is, because to them, that's like 20 years before they were born. They don't know it, dude.
Okay. Yeah, we're running into, there is kids now that are like, what is Scream?
God damn.
Yeah.
Just to put it in perspective.
I don't know if that's me being pissed that they're that dumb or that it's just.
And you got to remember, their Evil Dead is the Evil Dead remake, and they kind of looked at whatever Stars did a few years back, like, what are they doing?
What the fuck is this?
Yeah, serious. I'm being serious about
it. When they talk Halloween, you know what they're talking. They're talking that old Halloween movie that Rob Zombie did.
Nah, yes. I think they're talking about the one from a couple of years ago. No. No, I totally disagree on that. People know what Halloween is.
No. I had 2 year or last year or whenever it came out, I had a couple of people go in and say, all right, I don't get it. Who's the old lady from the new Halloween movie? Because she wasn't in Halloween. And I'm like, Jamie Lee Curtis? And they're like, yeah. And then they start telling me their Halloween that they remember. And it's the Rob Zombie movies. And they were completely confused by, I mean, seriously. And those, now Halloween is an exception because I think Halloween was good enough that it got all of us older fans to go out and see it. But a lot of the kids were just, I had people in my office, students, because they know I'm the movie guy. And they're like, what is this? I don't get it. It seems like it's not connected to Halloween. And then I had to be like, no, it's connected to the original Halloween.
I don't know,
like,
what,
yeah,
I
yeah, the old
do.
One. And I'm like, no, not the one you think. There's an older, old one.
I don't know what I would do in the face of such wanton stupidity.
It's, Kyle, to be fair, it's not stupidity.
I don't know.
No, it's not, because we are, you and Tim and I and the people who listen to the show, the people who love these 80s movies, it is the, we're older. And it is the huge exception to find somebody who is 19 or 20 years old who loves the 80s.
Well, if that's the case, I'm jealous then of them, because then, goddamn, they get a, some of them, I'm sure, will go back and discover all this great shit.
No, dude, but see, here's the problem.
I'm not going to throw the younger generation under the bus.
No. Their tastes are different.
They are.
I cannot tell you how many students, how many 19, 20-year-old kids I've had go back and look at the original Friday the 13th or the original Halloween. I'm like, yeah, it was really slow. And I'm like, what? They don't want tension. They don't want – what they want is what they grew up with, which is constant stimulation. I know it sounds derisive, but I don't mean it that way. It's the Xbox generation. They're used to instant gratification. Their taste and what – how we bitch about a lot of the new stuff being like, there's no story, it's just blah, 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 and it's just dumb. That's they're making that movie for their audience, and we're just not the audience anymore.
Yes. Yes.
What a strange world we live in.
Because, Kyle, you would have enjoyed last night after badminton. Maddie, Deering, and I are having a couple of beers, and there's a few movies Maddie mentioned not seeing, and I started screaming.
And how old is she?
What is she, 33, John? Do you remember?
Somewhere around there, yeah.
Yeah, I believe she's 33.
Maybe she has an excuse for some of these things.
There was a few. I was like, yeah, I'll give you that, I'll give you that. And then there's just one. I was like, no. Stop it. Just stop. It's just like, it was one of those
things. I'm going to hit you in the face with this shuttlecock.
Because literally, well, I invoked Kyle. I was like, who are you? Kyle's cousin? It's like, instead of five movies, you've seen six.
It's funny, though, because this is my second time through this. Because I was, when I was young, I grew up watching. Like, when I was the weird 15 or 16 year old kid who could talk to you at length about 1940s and 1930s and 1950s cinema, and not just horror films, but like the film noir and all that shit, because I loved it. So I could talk slasher movies and I could talk classic movies. But I was weird because so many people my age are like, I'm not gonna watch. I even in the 80s, I had people say, I'm not gonna watch. That's black and white. That's boring. I won't watch a black and white movie. And I'm like, okay, but you're missing out on so much. So this is not my first time through this, like, shock of, wow, you guys just really don't know. But then there's occasionally a kid, and there's one young man who worked for me, who's graduated, but he still stays in touch. And he's like, oh my God, I just saw this. And it's an 80s movie. And he's got a little group of friends he keeps showing stuff to. He's like, is there more like this? And then I tell him more stuff. And there was another young lady that worked for me. And I'm like, go watch Phantasm. It'll blow your mind. And she watched Phantasm, and she's like, I really liked it. It was cool. The little robot things that drilled into people's foreheads and whatnot. And I'm like, you know what? I'll let you call it a robot thing because you watched it.
Yeah, so. Sure.
Yeah. But for the most part, it's frightening. It's, we're old, Kyle. We're just friggin' old.
I refuse to believe that. I am old, but I don't feel like it. Anyway, moving on. I got Bruce Campbell news, and this looks pretty good. Bruce Campbell is going to be in a movie called Black Friday, a film about every retail worker's worst nightmare. And I've been wondering why this has not been a premise for a movie for a long time. And here is the synopsis. A ragtag group of toy store employees get more than they bargained for when Black Friday shoppers mutate into violent monsters. Bruce Campbell plays an upright manager named Jonathan, a new light for the reluctant and cocky Ash Williams actor. Black Friday also stars Devon Sawa. I like that dude. And as a dude who has gone through a divorce. And he is stuck at this shitty job. That sounds really cool. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Probably watch it at some point.
Yeah, I'll watch it and hope that it's good. I actually am more excited that Devon Sawa's in something.
Hey!
Bruce Campbell will slum it on occasion. But yeah, no, that's cool. I mean, I'll watch it. Like Tim said, I'll watch it.
Yeah.
Well, if you need more Devon Sawa news, he is in that new Danzig movie. Black Death Rider at Skull Valley or whatever the fuck.
No. I mean, why?
I wildly encourage everyone not to watch that fucking movie. Oh, God. Anyway, moving on. Did you guys see Guillermo del Toro's new Nightmare Alley trailer?
No.
It looks fantastic, and I did not know, John, maybe I'm one of those guys. Nightmare Alley is an old movie, and this is a remake?
Yeah.
Is it worth watching?
The old movie?
Yeah. I've never seen it. Look,
I like it.
Is it worth watching knowing that I hate noir movies? I can't stand them.
No. Don't watch it.
Okay. Okay, anyway, this is really cool because I checked this out and this has got me interested. I wish I didn't have to work some of these days. But Fathom Events has their annual Fright Fest, 8 weeks of fear and fun on the big screen this fall. And here's the lineup, guys. This is really, really cool. First, you've got they're on Sunday. Usually, they're all on Sundays. Cool. Maybe I can see some of these. Sunday, September 26th, and Wednesday, September 29th. You've got Carrie on the big screen. Saturday, October 2nd, you have a double feature, John, of the original Dracula and the original Frankenstein.
Yeah, they've done that before.
That would be pretty cool. Sunday, October 3rd, Spirited Away, that very famous anime movie. Thursday, October 7th, the original Evil Dead. Sunday and Monday, October 10th and 11th, the original Scream. Sunday and Wednesday, October 17th and 20th, the original Silence of the Lambs. October 24th and 25th, Howl's Moving Castle. And then they have this one I would love to go to, but I have to work on a Thursday. Or Tuesday. Tuesday, October 26th. Riff Tracks presents Amityville 4, The Evil Escapes. That would be glorious to see on the big screen. But Wednesday, October 27th, they have an original movie called The Call. Saturday, October 30th, the original Invisible Man, the original Wolfman double feature. And this one's cool, Tim. Tuesday, November 16th, Paranorman.
Oh, good one.
Yeah. There's a lot of... Would you guys... I don't know if I'm ready to go back to the theater. But I know damn well if I go to one of these, there's going to be like four people there in my theater. So That might take the sting away, even though I got the vaccine and everything. Is there any on that list?
Can I tell you what's showing at my local cinema, Big Mart, or Cinemark?
Yes.
What Fathom events are showing at mine?
Is it different?
Yes.
Okay.
Ready?
Yes.
Monday, October 4th, Tuesday, October 5th, and Wednesday, October 6th, we get God's Not Dead. Christian movie.
Yeah, is that the one with Kevin Sorbo?
I think so.
I've noticed since Corona, now, there's a lot of Christian shit in the theater.
Hold on. Monday, October 18th, and Thursday, October 21st, The Ends of the Earth, a documentary exploring faith, passion, and how hopes emerge from tragedy.
That's a big fat pass.
Yeah, and then into November, we get Journey with Jesus. So, yeah, that's the kind of shit that I get to see. And honestly, though, I'm not ready to go into the theater.
Well, would you like to go to the drive-in? This is a good one. September 24th and 25th. Pandemonium Picture Show Weekend at the Skyline in Shelbyville, Indiana. They're showing Friday, The Big Dollhouse. Then they have like this shock magician on stage. Then they're playing Cannibal the Musical, Mother's Day, and The Weird World of LSD. Saturday, they are showing at 8 o'clock sharp, John, mark your calendar, Savage fucking Streets.
Hate that fucking movie.
And then they have the Rocky Horror Picture Show. And Happily Ever After, a lost 35mm film. Camping available, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, moving on. That's about all I got. Some of those movies sounded really cool. I'd love to see. I would really like to see Carrie on the screen. I know Dad would love to go see Silence of the Lambs. He loves that movie. Maybe I could squeeze one in there, take a vacation day or something. But anyway, oh my God, dog. Holy shit, that's rank. My dog just blasted ass. Get out of here. You got to go. Read the questions, Tim. We got questions. Holy Jesus.
Bad. Okay. Hold on. That went weird on me. Okay. The ones I'm just seeing, Tristy Gnarly Martin. And I don't know if there's so much questions as much as some statements. Tristy Gnarly Martin goes, the funniest news I've read all week. Yes, Warner Brothers are currently making the Lost Boys remake. Apparently, the cast and director have been chosen, and they're in the first stages of production. Your thoughts?
We covered that. They're going to do everything eventually. I mean, this is just the next one up.
Yeah, I think this is going to make Tristan go on a rampage just because. Next one is, I'm loving the fact that one of the gnarly boys is rocking it in this season of
American Horror Story.
Yes. Culkin has really excelled himself. I'm so proud. Have any of you guys seen this new season?
No.
I
was going to say, I haven't even heard anyone talk about it.
I kind of got into the last season, or the last season of American Horror Story I watched was the one about the Trump election and the killer clowns, and I didn't even make it to the end of that before, like, it was fucking, it just turned really bad. I have breaking news, though. Guys, mark your calendar. Wednesday, September 22nd, the Historic Art Craft Theater in beautiful downtown Franklin, Indiana, is showing a 35mm of, are you ready? Breaking 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Nice.
That's awesome.
You don't get it.
Go on with the questions, Tim.
Okay. Voice is just going to hell here. Patricia Stevens has a question, actually. She says, if you were a character in Kung Fu Hustle, that what would your specialty be as a master? And I love Tristan's comment to this.
I didn't mean it.
It said, Patricia, mine would be summoning up the dead teen idols from the 80s to do my bidding.
Yeah, that would be cool.
I don't know.
I would probably be the kung fu master who could... I would have to fuel myself up with bad gas station pizza, and then I could just, like, shoot diarrhea lasers out of my butt. Or something okay. like that. Tim would be the guy that would destroy every bathroom.
I was gonna say that would be I would be one of those weirdos in living in that little town that like their specialty would be able to just blow up an outhouse and hope it hits one of the gang members to kill them.
Either that or you would be the guy that couldn't fight. Until we made you mad about the buckos. And then you go out and fucking rage kill everyone.
True.
What else we got?
Okay. For the love of God, Facebook. Malignant is up to be one of the shittiest movies of 2021. This is according to Tristan. In my opinion, it wants to know thoughts. I have not watched it yet, but I have read a lot of stuff of what people are saying. And this is literally, this might be the 2021 version of House of a Thousand Corpses. I have not seen anyone just be like, meh.
Yeah, you hate it or you love it.
Yeah, it's literally like worst movie in the past decade.
And then I also had people jumping all over themselves to recommend it to me. Yeah. I have a copy. I'm going to watch it.
That would be me.
Like, I'm like, huh, okay. Some people like it. Some people really hate it. So wonder where I'm going to go.
I will guarantee you this. It is the most 100% bonkers horror movie that has came out of a major studio in a long fucking time. This shit is that Malignant is bananas. And I say it's the best movie of the year so far. I don't know what you're talking about, Tristan.
But that is all the stuff I got, people.
Well, who wants to go first? Let's get to our movies.
I believe that Tim should go first.
Hit it, Tim. I was going to say, you want me to go with the bad one?
Yeah, because I need to talk about Cosmos, War of the Planets.
Coordinates to base Orion. Compare figures with signal direction.
Angle Alpha 37. Angle Alpha 12. Velocity 600 miles per second.
Signals in direction course. Power signals constant. Exact coordinate. Signal exact direction. Course confirmed. What is it?
Mila, check the distance of the stellar explosion.
Explosion.
Information requested on explosion is non-existent. No change of course necessary.
There's something wrong with it. It's the end.
Hey,
ago.
Okay, Cosmos, War of the Planets, or it's just known as War of the Planets most of the time. Let's not forget Captain Hamilton kind of looks like a bootleg version of Billy Zane, so he might have been Billy Zane's dad at one point.
That would be my special power if I was a Kung Fu master. I could look at you and tell you who you were the bootleg version of. It's a very shitty Kung Fu power, but I could do it.
I thought you were going to say that was going to be your kung fu power. You'd be able to turn into Billy Zane.
Oh, no, that would be a great kung fu power.
Okay, but back to talking about War of the Planets. It really does feel like a crude episode of Star Trek. I don't know if that's on purpose. That is just me. But we have a crew on a ship that is coming back, which kind of feels like Alien. It's coming back. They're a day out, and they've been out in space for 6 months. And Captain Hamilton's ship receives a message in space, and basically they are forced to go check out what the hell the origin of these signals are and what's going on. So they go to fly off through the solar system to this planet, and basically they get there, and they're greeted by a giant red, I guess a red-eyed robot, if you want to say it like that, and also meet some blue-gray guys down in the caves that were they allude to could have been humans how many years ago that came to this planet. And basically, they screwed it all up, and now this giant robot that was put in charge has basically has enslaved them, even though these blue and gray people can't even speak through – it wasn't – telepathic, I forget what they were calling it, but they didn't have to move their lips and they could talk to you. But the whole thing is just basically Captain Hamilton's trying to figure out, okay, how did we destroy the robot? How do we get back home? How did we get all out of this? And they have the whole shocker ending kind of thing, which I thought was actually kind of cool. But yeah, is the movie great? No, not by any means, but it was like watching a crude episode of Star Trek, so it kept me halfway in. It kept me half interested throughout the movie. I honestly picked this movie because I thought this would be something John would like. I was wrong as I was watching it, because he was like, yeah, it's halfway through it, and I was like, crap. It's just like, he's not going to like this one. This isn't what I thought it was going to be. But overall, I'm just glad I got to see it. Am I ever going to go revisit it again? Probably not. So take it for what it is. That's War of the Planets. That's what I thought it was.
I'll give my 5 minutes on it, and then, John, I know you can go to town on this, because I'm sure you're waiting. This movie's boring. This movie is like, what if Gort, from The Day the Earth Stood Still, after that movie, he turned into a real shithead and overtook a planet, and it's not even that. That sounds cool. This movie is not. This movie sucks. Captain Phillips is... it's boring. Everything in this movie was boring, Tim. I was hoping we'd have some 60s groovy, kind of like throwbacky pew 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 laserness and aliens and stuff. This all looked cheap as shit, and I did not any of it. Boo, boo for this movie. It did make me want to see better movies like this, like, you know, the old cheesy sci-fi 50s stuff, like, you know, War of the Satellites or something. But I think we picked the best one ever when we did The Green Slime.
Yeah.
I was just like, man, I could be watching The Green Slime right now or something like that. And sadly, this isn't an hour and a half I'll never get back. There's better movies out there, Tim. Or kids. Yeah. Not one of them. So, John, sharpen your knives. Go to town, sir. Yeah.
40 minutes in, and nothing happens. And then stuff happens. And the plot they were all supposed to care about, which they don't make obvious, which none of you mentioned, is the overlying theme is we shouldn't let technology take over, because we find out, like, the computers, that whenever they want to do something, consult a computer and it'll tell us what to do. And they even have, like, a futuristic sex machine where they each put a hand on the globe and have, like, space sex, because they don't want to actually, like, fall in love and do stuff.
They had Demolition Man sex.
Kind of, yeah. And then, of course, they land on the planet, and there's the big giant robot guy. And the whole point of the people living underneath, and they weren't really humans, I think they're aliens, but, you know, the aliens tell them, yeah, we made a bunch of computers and got really lazy and just told it to, like, you know, go ahead and run things. And then they kicked us out because the computers took over. Gee, let's beat on that dead horse theme again of technology bad, which, you know, okay, fine. That's a legit science fiction-y sort of thing. I've seen that before. Here's where I really get annoyed with this movie. So you have the giant computer dude who is like, ha-ha, you puny humans. I need you to fix my circuits so that I can take over the universe. Well, first of all, I probably should not have told them that, smarty pants. And then they're like, ha-ha, do it. Put my circuit board in. And then they put it in backwards. And then the computer thing is like, no, I will kill you all. And then proceeds to not be able to hit anything with his laser beams.
Oh, I figured that was just going to happen. Yeah.
And then he explodes because they put the board in wrong. Well, what kind of all-powerful, technology-dominating, universe-conquering critter dies if you put the board in backwards?
Well, I figured that was kind of a common sci-fi trope. They've done that kind of shit a million times.
No. I've seen a lot of sci-fi tropes. I watch the hell out of these movies. I've never seen one as stupid as this.
Maybe not as stupid, but they do this kind of stuff. Like, how many times have you seen in a movie where, you know, someone's trying to break into a computer or a password or something, and then they just get pissed and just dump water on the thing and it works? Like, they do that in Battleship.
Here it's not even like that. Yeah. Like the things like, I am smarter than you and all powerful and intelligent. Now put that board back in and replace that one board that I can't replace, because even though I have robots that I control that are running around the planet shooting people, I don't have a robot that can put that one circuit board in.
Yeah. I mean, they do that with the Death Star, the biggest piece of technology, except don't shoot it right here.
Well, no, but at least in the Death Star, it's like, all right, it's impossible for anybody. And of course, if Luke didn't have the Force, he couldn't have shot it. So it was, you know, everybody always points out that, why would you have the giant flaw? Well, they didn't think anybody in hell and back could ever make that shot.
There's a whole entire movie about that, everybody. We're not going to get into it.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I mean, this is pointless. You know, it's like, oh, and then there's this weird tacked on ending that the computer on their ship suddenly starts talking like the computer that took over the planet was trying to do everything. And the only fucking guy that notices is the captain, and everybody else is like, yay, yay, yay. And the captain's like, oh no. And then the movie's over. And wah, I'm just like, wah. Yeah, like, what the fuck movie? This is dumb. You know what this is? This is a really bad, I think it's Italian from the dubbing and music and whatnot. This is just a really bad, shittily made. It almost feels like a Russian movie that was just dubbed, because the Russians were making a lot of just dumb sci-fi that's not fun at all. And it's just, I don't know, man. It's bad. Yeah, I mean, you know what? Here's what you do. You take this movie and you redub the whole thing, and I think you can make a pretty funny fucking movie out of it.
Yeah, you could totally make that, like, what was that one old werewolf movie that they bought and just overdubbed it, and, like, the werewolf went to Washington and became the president or something?
Yeah, President Werewolf.
Yeah, there you go. You could do that with this movie. You could probably buy it for a ham sandwich.
Except that movie in its original form is actually pretty good.
But they made it funny, and you could buy this for cheap. Someone do that.
I don't think you have to buy it. I bet you it's public domain.
I just, yeah.
So yeah, no, not a fan. Not a fan, Tim. Not a fan.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought it was going to be one right up your alley. It was the reason why,
well,
and it was.
I'm sitting down and watching, and I'm sitting down and watching. I'm like, oh, I love me some cheesy sci-fi, and then I'm like, wow, this is an attempt to be smart, and it. This is what happens when somebody's trying to be smart and they're really, really stupid.
At any point in this movie, Troy McClure could show up. It's one of those movies.
Except Troy McClure would raise the intelligence of a film. And when I can say that, you know you're in trouble.
Who wants to go next? John, you go next.
I decided to pick a 1988 classic that I'm sure Tristan Early Martin's happy that I did because it has a Corey in it. I decided to pick The Watchers.
It's known that Vanadyne has conducted classified biological research for the National Security Organization. Any reason for our viewers to be concerned?
None whatsoever. Although the research animals which were kept here have been destroyed, absolutely no toxic elements have been released into...
Who escaped?
GH3.
The dog?
And one of the Oxcom.
Are the Oxcom and the dog still telepathically linked?
On a biofrequency that only the Oxcom can receive.
Travis Cornell made a new friend today. And it may just cost him his life.
In the pocket!
The dog was like a homing device. The creature, a search and destroy missile.
You know what happened to Tracy's, don't you?
Does Travis have a dog?
No, no pets.
Travis, is that you?
Can't you control it? It's got to be stopped.
GH3? It's a code. You're a research animal. That's why you're so smart.
They created the perfect killer.
As long as he's with the dog, his life is in danger.
Now, how are they going to stop it?
It's after you, isn't it? Stay, you die, and I say we make a stand right here, right now.
Corey Haim stars in Watchers, from the best-selling science fiction thriller by Dean R. Koontz.
So this movie, there's like an explosion in a lab, and we see a dog gets out of the building, and then something else is chasing the dog. Then Michael Ironside shows up and talks to a mysterious man who asks him what got out. And what got out is GH3, which is the dog, and then something else chasing the dog. One of them is referred to as the bad seed. It's probably the thing chasing the dog that murders the shit out of everybody. They don't say that for sure, but I'm pretty sure that's where they're going. The thing is, it's a military experiment where they actually psychically connect the dog with a killing machine, and then they send the dog out to infiltrate bases because, you know, everybody loves dogs. Uh-huh. And then the monster will follow it and murder everything around the dog. Well, unfortunately,
the system
murders the dog too.
Yes.
But this bioweapon has gotten loose, and it's going to kill the dog and anything with the dog. So we see the monster chase the dog to a farm where we meet Travis, and Travis is Corey Haim, and he's trying to get a little bit something from his girlfriend up in the, you know, the hayloft. Which, let me tell you something. By this point in time, you know, you would have thought, right, that our buddy, oh my God, we were just talking about him.
Billy Zane.
Yeah, we would have thought that Billy Zane would have called him up and said, don't go into haylofts.
Never make out with anyone in haylofts, dude.
Yeah. So, like, he gets interrupted by her dad, and he sneaks out, and then he ends up with the dog. And his girlfriend and her father get attacked by the monster that followed the dog. The dad gets killed, and she's traumatized. Then there's this weird lady detective named Porter who keeps talking about a Sasquatch. All of a sudden, bodies start showing up without eyes. And they never do explain why the monster rips their eyes out, but whatevs. The dog shows up, and then he goes to school, but the dog gets out of the house and shows up at the school. And the dog's super smart because it goes over to a sweet-ass Macintosh SE, grabs a pencil and starts typing out a message to him. which basically, like, yeah, you need to run. Yeah. So Travis and Furface, because Corey's apparently aren't really creative when they name dogs.
No.
So he named the dog Furface, which I guess is not wrong. But they end up at the family cabin when his mom gets grabbed by the government men. So then they all go like super home alone on it and set all kinds of traps and wait for it to show up. But then the bad guys show up before the monsters do. And then we find out Michael Ironside's character is this mysterious third experiment, and he has no empathy or sympathy. And then he goes head to head with Corey, which doesn't work out well for him. The Corey Haim character uses his mad hunting skills to track the monster down through the woods after he wounds it, and then he finishes it off. And then even though the cabin is burned down, there's a bunch of bodies, everybody lives happily ever after, except for all the fucking people that get killed. And there's a lot of people that run into the monster that get killed, all of which get their eyeballs ripped out, which is kind of messed up. But I liked it. This movie is based on a book from Dean Koontz, and I really like Dean Koontz's stuff. Phantoms was the bomb, yo.
Hey, Affleck was the bomb in Phantoms, yo.
Yeah, Michael Ironside is great. I will continue to say this till I'm blue in the face. Corey Haim was actually an underrated actor when he was a young kid. Great kid actor. Story's fast-paced, kind of fun, spooky, straightforward monster movie. They kill a bunch of kids, including a very young Jason Priestley, which was neat. You got homemade bombs, tripwire, Scrabble. It's a great movie. Creature design is okay. They don't put it on a screen a whole lot, and that's probably for the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. It started off as a bigger budget production at the time, and from what I can remember, the production got cut halfway through.
That makes sense.
I figured it was a story like that probably.
In the what was supposed to be going down, they like tried to correct in the sequels. It was kind of like the Stephen King thing, but instead of everybody still supports the Stephen King thing, people don't support the Dean Koontz.
Yeah.
Movies nearly as much, but there is a lot of stuff left out that's in the book.
Yeah.
Of course. And that would have made a little more sense.
Sure. This really read to me like I've said before a bunch of times, I didn't get Fangoria around here, but I bet the stories in Fangoria would have read like, oh man, there's just going to be this really cool Dean Koontz movie, and then the next issue you get, oh, they sliced the budget in half. And then probably slashed it some more because, yeah, they keep that monster in the dark.
Yeah, you know, it's flawed, but
sure.
Hey, man, it's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah. I watched this today, and this has been I actually have this on the VH. It's been a good 25 years since I've seen this movie, and I remember being a fan of mm-hmm. this one and the second one, but not the third and the fourth one are kind of crappy.
You're not into the Wingshauser and Mark Hamill ones.
No. Give me, I want Corey or I want the Beastmaster. And if it's not those guys, I don't want any. I remember part two being actually really, really good. I think, and don't quote me on this, but I believe I prefer, I haven't seen either of them in a really long time. I believe I prefer part two. I could be totally wrong, but I remember really liking part two for some reason. Because I remember I bought the poster of part two, and it hung in my room forever. But yeah, this one is, I don't know if Corey Haim did a good job in this movie, but I really wasn't into him. I don't know if he could. Obviously, he did his best stuff with Feldman. And Feldman can hold a movie. I don't know.
No, I disagree.
I don't know if Corey Haim could.
No, Haim did not do his best stuff with Feldman because, in my opinion, Haim's very best role was Silver Bullet. Silver Bullet.
Yeah. He's really good in Lucas, too.
Yep. Mm. But Lucas is where
that's a whole
Charlie Sheen took liberties with him. Apparently.
Yeah, with some. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you believe the Fell Dog.
I don't. I want to.
Well, there goes our one listener.
Well, I want to, but he just he pulled so much shit with that documentary that I'm just, even if it is true, I don't care anymore because you've made a mockery of it and you've been touting this shit forever. And then when, you know, the rubber meets the road, you didn't come through with your nonsense with that fucking documentary or shit. So kind of like the Ric Flair thing, just enough. Well, maybe it's not. Anyway, Watchers is, this is the second best dog actor in movie history. This dog is really good, but not as good as the dog in the Boogans.
Well, see, you're completely ignoring, like, Ren 10 10.
No, that dog in the Boogans is amazing.
What about Lassie, though?
No, the dog in the Boogans, I'm not shitting you. That is the best dog acting I've ever fucking seen.
I don't know. I think Lassie's up there. You got all the Air Bud movies.
Air Bud. Spooky Buddies. Forgot about those guys.
Yeah. Air Bud Goes to Space. That's a good one.
They shot that dog into space?
They're Space Buddies or something.
Space
I thought.
Buddies?
Can I just remember I've never seen it. I just remember the dogs in little astronaut costumes.
All I remember about that movie is Rick talking about, y'all got Space Buddies.
Yep.
It's a really good, like you said, this is a good monstery Home Alone 80s mashup. Michael Ironside is always great. You know, the only bad Michael Ironsides I've ever seen is that Turbo Kid movie. And he is not one to phone it in, and he's really good here. He's
super
intense.
That Prom Night sequel he was in was shit, so.
No way. Where he was trying to fuck his daughter, or his daughter was trying to fuck him?
Yeah, I mean, that movie is complete dog doo-doo.
No way.
They took a perfectly good slasher movie and turned it into some stupid shit.
Nope, they made it better.
Nope.
I would recommend this. If you've never seen Watchers, it's really good. It's the best Dean Koontz stuff there is, I think.
What about Phantom?
Some of the other Koontz movies are just pure garbage.
Yeah,
out there.
Koontz got... He got Koontzed. I think that guy, there was no way that he could have ever... I think Stephen King was the dude, and there was
I've read enough Dean Koontz
in
to know.
In movie form, I'm saying.
I've read enough Dean Koontz to know one thing. Every Dean Koontz book that I've ever read, I loved. And every Dean Koontz book that I ever read and loved, I've been like, it would be impossible to make a movie of this. The style and the way and the kind of stories he tell, he's not going to translate to movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, he is the lesser. I think Stephen King he's got the corner marketed on that, on this type of shit. But this is a really good movie, and I don't have too much bad to say about it, and I really kind of want to watch the second one.
Tim, do you love it?
I don't love it. I like it. I am kind of the, these days, one of the weird people that I did read the book before the movie, but also too, I knew a lot of the, when that movie came out, I knew it was screwed, like before everybody else got to put their opinion out, because once you started hearing the production getting cut in half and different things of that nature, I knew they weren't going to be able to do whatever they would want to do. And I think it shows. Is it a horrible movie? No, by no means it's not. I like it enough. I have a t-shirt for it because I'm just a fan of that, of those movies in general. I wish more could have been on screen, especially because after Watchers, it was just like, we're all just talking about it just before, Koontz projects just, they were crap on film after that. It was nothing. So it is what it is, but it's fun. I would still like to see some kind of director's cut of it.
Yeah. I hadn't seen it in 20 years, kind of like Kyle, and I'm glad I checked it out again. It had been a long time.
Oh, yeah.
It was
fun. I checked it out. I went probably a good decade without watching it. And last year, last summer, I think I, when I found the first one again, I was like, well, guess I'm watching the other ones. Just watched all four of them in like a week. And two, that was when I found out there was, I think it's 2020 or 2019, there was a remake slated for this and it just never happened. They were putting together a director. There was supposedly a script for it and everything, and it just never happened. And if there was something that I could actually see a remake for, and I think it has room for it, it is something mm-hmm. a Watchers, like a movie like this, I could see a remake being made.
Well, I mean, it's flawed, so they could do better.
Yeah, that's why I said I could easily see a remake being for this. Not like Salem's Lot and then have Rob Lowe in it and be a boring piece of shit. But that's a whole other conversation.
Well, you do know they're doing a new version of that, right?
I don't care. I don't give a rat's ass.
I think, and I know people that disagree with me, but Salem's Lot-wise, that miniseries from Tobe Hooper, I've read the book, it feels perfect. Leave it alone.
I won't say perfect, but I do like
it's the spirit of it, definitely.
Yes, I do. I Maddie and I was even talking about that last night, and I was just impressed that Maddie liked Salem. It's weird. The movie has aged, and it still has a slight creepiness to it. It's like
big time.
I was like, that is good.
Anyway, maybe we should do Watcher. No, never mind. I'm not going to suggest that. I was thinking maybe we should do that. Maybe we should do like a Dean Koontz movie episode. But no, those are all pretty bad. And I don't want to watch Goldblum and Hideaway ever again. That's a pass. Anyway, my pick this week was one of the... the movies that I saw for the first time. This movie absolutely blew me away when I saw it for the first time. My movie is, let me get you a year here. It is Kung Fu Hustle from 2004. Remember, 2004 is kind of like the end of that, you know, Tarantino came out in 96, and then you were getting all these independent kind of like that guy, as much as I don't like him, he did blow the door off of independent cinema. Whether you want to call that true independent, having millions of dollars for your movies, that's what we'll call him here for lack of a better word. This is towards the tail end of it, and I remember around this time we were getting some Asian kind of, you know, imported movies that were really good. You had this, and I remember around this time was also Black Mask. Because Jet Li had blown up and all of a sudden Kung Fu was hot. And I remember getting recommended this movie while I was getting the last part of my tattoo done. My buddy Dave said, man, you have got to come to the house after this is done and watch this movie called Kung Fu Hustle. And I was like, okay, you know, sure, whatever. Because I usually would go get tattooed for like 10 hours straight and then I would crash at his house and go home the next day. So we ended up watching this and it absolutely blew my mind. It is directed by Stephen Chow, who also stars in the movie as, what's his name? Oh no, as Sing. And Sing has a buddy that are home. They're both homeless dudes. And this movie opens up, I can't remember if it was the 30s or 40s. I'm going to say the 30s in China. I don't know if they actually gave the name of the town, but we're going to say it's like China in the 1930s filtered through what the American Roaring 30s was. So you have an opening scene of the Crocodile Gang going into the police station and beating the living shit out of somebody because he has arrested the girlfriend of the Crocodile Gang. And I don't know why everybody in this movie has absolutely rancid-ass teeth, but they do. That's a thing in here. As they're leaving the jail, the Crocodile Gang is quickly axed to death by the Axe Gang, and the Axe Gang takes over. So then you meet Stephen Chow and his fat buddy. I don't know what his name is, but he's funny because he's the, like, dopey guy. They live in a street, I don't know what, like a traffic signal is where they live, and they make ends meet by pretending to be part of the Axe Gang and running a racket, you know, a protection racket. They make their way down to Pigsty Alley, which is this big U-shaped kind of apartment block thing, and it is run by the landlord, and you meet the landlord as she is an old lady with curlers in a nightgown perpetually smoking a stogie, and her husband is a woman
who can run at top speed.
Oh, she can run like goddamn Wile E. Coyote. We're going to get to that. Her husband is, she's always smacking the shit out of him. I called him Chinese Mickey Nolans because he looks exactly like the guy. Turns out they suss him out. They're like, you're not part of the Axe Gang. And they quickly get mixed up and stuff. The Axe Gang kind of comes after Pigsty Alley. I'm not sure. Maybe you guys can fill me. I don't remember why the Axe Gang wanted Pigsty Alley.
They didn't. Well, the two fake guys from the Axe Gang show up. And they, like, basically pretend like they're going to throw this firecracker to call for help. And it actually hits one, the boss of the Axe Gang as he's walking by.
Yeah.
And blows his, like it looks cartoonish. Like,
yeah.
Like, you know, his hat's all messed up. And then he comes in there. And then the people from the place are like, you know, hey, don't do that, blah, blah, blah. And then the Axe Gang gets all pushy, and then that's when the three Kung Fu masters who live there fight the Axe Gang because they're pushing the locals around, and that's what starts everything off.
Okay. I could remember why they were after Pigsty Alley. Maybe they were – I thought they were hiding Sing and his buddy for some reason. But you're introduced to the denizens of Pigsty Alley. You have Donut, who is a baker. You have a tailor guy, a guy that's really strong. The landlord and her husband. And turns out through the course of the movie, these are all old retired Kung Fu masters. And, you know, there's not a lot of going to... They want Pigsty Alley. The Axe Gang goes and hires some thugs to go take care of them. And they have these two really cool henchmen, hitmen, assassin guys that have this big, long, like, cello-looking thing that they play and can summon like swords and zombie dudes with their by playing this instrument. That's a really cool fight. Those guys end up getting their asses beat. The Axe Gang indoctrinates Sing into the gang to, and his first mission is to go in the, what do they call that hospital? The House of the Ill-Reformed or something? Yeah. They had some funny name for it. And go and get this guy called the Beast to take care of Pigsty Alley. And the Beast is this funny old man with very thin hair. And he is actually a fucking super badass that practices like the Toad style kung fu. And they have a really cool kung fu fight in this casino with the landlords fighting him. And there is just some cool computer effects in this movie, and it all culminates into a giant fight in Pigsty Alley. The kung fu in this is top-notch, amazing. And this whole movie is like, what if we mix the kung fu genre with the roaring 30s and 40s and also a Looney Tunes cartoon? And it just works so well. I love all these characters. My favorite being like Buttcrack Bob. Buttcrack Bob. There's a couple parts in here that the humor wouldn't fly today. They make some effeminate jokes on Buttcrack Bob's expense that are kind of like, ooh, I don't know if he could do that today, but still they're funny as shit. The landlady she's an iconic character. Just smacking the shit out of people. Her special power is she's the tiger kung fu expert, or she's educated in the tiger roar, where she just screams really loud and she shreds people. Her husband's a kung fu master. I really like the tailor, who is a kung fu master that has like kind of like the Shang-Chi Ten Rings thing. He has like all these metal bracelets on his wrists that he uses to fight and block people. I like that guy. I like to pull. The pole fighter guy that fought the musical assassin dudes. This movie is an absolute joy, and this movie is so much fun to watch, and you can tell they had so much fun making it that I went and looked up. I was like, I need some more Stephen Chow in my life, so I looked up and seen what he did, and sadly, not too much. He did Kung Fu Hustle. And then, like, the only thing I think he did after that, he did a couple things. That Shaolin Soccer's okay, if you like soccer. I'm not sure that translated to anything, but he did do Journey to the West, which is a big-time franchise overseas, but I don't think over here hardly anybody knows it. It's about the monkey kings and demon hunting and stuff. I do want to check that one out. I looked at that and I could get that on the Fire Stick. So I don't know. This is just a 5-star fun ass movie. What do you guys think?
Tim?
It was a blast. It's a lot. It's just paying homage to a lot of. How to put it, a lot of, wouldn't say exactly true kung fu movies, but just paying homage to a lot of the fantasy stuff of the movies and having a comedy, like a lifted eyebrow at some of the stuff and just enjoying it and trying to make something that's more of a fantasy comedy than it was a true kung fu film. And just, I think they could prove, hey, we can do this internationally. We can have other audiences than just here actually enjoy this and laugh at it.
It's weird that it works. It's weird that it works that way.
Yeah.
Like, we can enjoy the imports from overseas, but when the overseas people go in with the Hollywood people, they make stuff that's not very good, like that Matt Damon Great Wall movie. It's weird that it works one way, but not the other.
Say that again, I'm sorry.
It's weird that we can enjoy stuff that's imported to us from others, like Asian stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But when we try to get in with the the Chinese crowd and make movies specifically for them and get in it with them monetarily, we get stuff like The Great Wall with Matt Damon that just sucks.
I think what they like and what they like, how to put it, I think we screw up if we're trying too hard to make something that is just for them.
I think we screw up when we try to make it for everyone.
But also, when you're just trying to make it for Chinese audiences and it's an American film, I think they screw up a lot.
Yeah, you're right there.
I think they do much better when they're not.
Just to be clear, the Great Wall was a Chinese production that had an American actor in it. And much like when The Rock tried to do the Burning Tower Building movie that he did. Lot of those productions, they're just, nobody likes them. They're not good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there was a while there that we were doing stuff to American movies and putting things in there just so they would fly overseas. We're
still doing that.
Yeah.
We're still bending the knee to China.
It's blah. It doesn't work. Yeah. And it sticks out like a sore thumb.
Kung Fu Hustle. When I first saw this movie 17 years ago, I really liked it. I like it less now. It's still a cool movie, but I forgot how stylized it was. And that stylized with, you know, trying too hard to be 1930s, there's a part where like it's almost like a dance number with axes and shit like that. You know, okay, I get it through the X Gang, but a lot of it seems like very, like, song and dance sort of thing. The live-action cartoon shit has not aged well. And again, it's a super stylized, and it just feels very early 2000s. And some of the CGI is just not good. But... yeah, the fight scenes in the actual movie, they're actually not trying to be cartoonish, and they're actually fighting. The fight scenes are excellent. Some of the weird kung fu shit that happens is really cool. I like the guys with the magical weapon where they were able to basically using the musical instrument to focus their chi and different styles. That's cool. Whenever they try to do comedy... because, like, the beast is supposed to be scary, I'll just murder you, and it's a little too slapstick and funny for my tastes. And then, you know, the one guy, Singh, goes from complete screw-up to basically he is almost beaten to death by the beast, and then they wrap him in some rags and stuff using Chinese medicine, and then he... comes out of the rags like he's a butterfly, and now he's super kung fu guy because he's got chi.
But see, I could buy that because it worked for Conan. And also...
No, I'm sorry. There's shit here. It played really good to me the first time I saw it, but now, 17 years later, I'm just kind of like, yeah, listen, I love the Bruce Lee references. There's a Bruce Lee thing that the landlady does in the back. There's a whole thing where they're like the landlady and her husband are like basically they actually call them like the lovers. And that's like an actual Chinese legend. And it kind of also figures out with their powers that it fits there. Only it's supposed to be a handsome young man and a beautiful young woman, so they kind of played with that and had fun with it. I appreciate it. There's even a reference to Kubrick's The Shining with all the blood flying down the hallway.
Yeah.
But it just, I'm kind of like, you know, every time, like, the bit where she's, like, chasing him and they're like,
they go all Roadrunner legs.
Yeah. No. Sorry. No. Hey, it takes the edge off of all the cool kung fu stuff. And my preference is, if I'm going to watch a kung fu movie, I don't want cartoons. I want the Shaw Brothers. I want 39 Chambers. I want stuff like that. And the kung fu, and it's just kung fu in this movie, is really good. So I'm not saying don't watch Kung Fu Hustle, because there's a lot of cool stuff in here. I just don't like it like I used to.
This is a shocking turn of events, Tim.
Again, yes.
Whoa. I'm not saying it's a bad movie, guys. I'm really not. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying every time they did the musical stuff for the choreography or the cartoon stuff, it just kind of kept taking me away from the stuff in the movie I was really getting a kick out of.
I even like think that was that a whole joke.
Fight, the whole fight in the casino.
That's great.
Oh, yeah. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
She does the whole fight in the casino is great stuff.
She does the Bruce Lee flick the nose thing.
Uh-huh. She does that in the car, in the back of the car. She actually does the whole thing with the nose flick and the fingers and the pointing. Yeah. That's literally right out of a Bruce Lee movie. And I appreciated
well,
that.
Well, I read her husband was Bruce Lee's stand-in.
So
old Chinese Mickey Dolenz.
Yeah. So it's not a bad movie. I just think there's a lot better. If you're looking for Kung Fu, there's a lot better movies to watch.
I want to get into some of these newer Kung Fu, because I remember I would get like old when I was collecting my VHS stuff, there was always like trailers on there for some new age Kung Fu's. I guess we'll call this like new age Kung Fu. That seems like a good moniker to throw on it. There was one called Journey to the West. I wanted to see that because that's Stephen Chow. I just talked about that. There's one called The Good, the Bad, the Weird. I want to see. There's another one I can't think of. Like Black Mask is really great too. It's like if they did this type of thing, only they mix it with like noir.
So I don't like Tarantino, but I'm going to butcher the name of this. Have you seen like Sukiyaki Western Django?
Western Django was one of them I wanted to see.
Oh, now that is a weird combination of kung fu, overly stylized stuff, and spaghetti westerns. And it shouldn't work, but you mix it all together and it worked really good.
Yeah, that's what The Good, the Bad, the Weird looks like. Spaghetti westerns mixed with kung fu and gunfighting. It looked really cool. There was another one, but I can't remember. But I think this is an all-time jam. And it's great, in my opinion. But I think that's all we got to say about Kung Fu Hustle. Chances are, I think probably people, the word's out on this one. It's nothing that we dug up or hasn't been talked about already. I just wanted to see it because I hadn't seen it in a good 15 years. So.
Mm-hmm. I dug something up for the next show, though. Oh, boy.
Yeah, when we have one.
Why, when we have, what's wrong?
Well, what do you got for the next show?
All right. I am going to pick, and you guys have not covered a movie called Savage Harvest, have you? It's from 1981.
No.
Hey, this is a killer lion movie.
Oh.
Yeah, and you got Tom Skerritt, Michelle Phillips, and Anne-Marie Martin from the best movie ever, The Boogans. But it's a family in Africa finds itself under attack by a pride of lions.
I think I have heard about this. I know what you're talking about.
It's tagline is awesome because the tagline is the most endangered species now is man.
That is a good one.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I'm excited about Savage Harvest 1981. I don't think I've ever heard anyone talk about it before. So that's why. And I've not seen it. It's a blind pick for me. I'm excited for it, but it could be a piece of doo-doo. But we'll find out together.
What you got, Tim? Nothing again.
I don't know. I won't be around for a couple of weeks, kids.
Yeah, we'll get into that. But I have mine picked for the next week.
Okay.
It's a blind pick. Comes highly recommended from Dan. He has sent me no less than 3 text messages about this movie. And this movie is called Chompy and the Girls.
Yes, I have a copy sitting
from
there.
This year.
I'm hoping it's like Captain Caveman.
It kind of looks like that.
Where the hell am I going to find that?
you'll find it somewhere. If not, we could get it to you. So my pick is Chompy and the Girls. Tim's got a mystery pick because he never does his homework. And Lion Attack movies next time we come back. So anytime I got anything to say before we get out of here?
Nope.
Nah.
Nah. I guess we're out of here. Goodbye,
yep,
everyone.
See you all whenever.
Yep.
Turn out the lights. The party's over. They say that all good things must end. Call it a night. The party's over. And tomorrow starts the same old thing again.